We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. We have Jarrett Sutton on the line. Jarrett, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. Could you please tell us where you are?
I am in Chicago. I am up here at the NBA Combine. The G League Elite Camp is finishing up this morning. And then we got the Combine starting officially this afternoon. So big week up here in Chicago. And the draft lottery tonight as well. So big night, big day in general for us here up in Chicago.
Anybody that's going to be there participating that we might know? Any players of local ties or anyone that you're particularly looking forward to watching?
At the Combine or?
The Combine.
We have, it depends on really kind of how today goes this morning. We've had a couple players drop out yesterday, but I still think we'll have a good show and good representation. Ochai Agbaji for KU fans will be up here. So it'll be good to see Ochai. Saw Jalen Wilson play the last couple days. Marcus Garrett did not play. He had a concussion and a workout. So we were able to interview him, though, 2 days ago. So it was good to spend some time with Marcus. But, yeah, those are a couple of the KU names that'll be here. And then, obviously, with Ochai, he's got a really, really good opportunity to show some things here in the combine portion. So excited to see him. And we Jared Butler will be here. Davion Mitchell might be a late scratch because Davion, I think, is going to be probably in that top 10 range, top lottery range in the top 14. But some Baylor guards will be here. Saw Maceo Teague yesterday, played really well. It was good to see him. Got a chance to interview him as well. So some local ties as well, just Big 12 ties there. And a couple of the Texas guys, I think Greg Brown and Kai Jones will be here. I think they'll interview. I'm not sure if they'll participate, though, in the actual on-floor scrimmages, drill testing, shooting drills, those things. I don't know if they'll be participating in that.
All right, so for those of us that will never see all this and watch these workouts, take us through what the players will go through and what the setup's like and what a regular day at the combine watching all these players, what all that entails.
Yeah, so it's great this year. I mean, obviously we didn't have a combine last year, right? We were doing everything through Zoom. As we got closer to the draft, which was November, it's weird to say still, we were able to interview up to 10 guys, but to interview and work them out, it could only be our GM or assistant GM, and we only could go up to 10 players. So I didn't get to see any players in the process in person, even working out in our facility. So we're back to a more of a normal schedule. We're still having a draft in late July. Usually we have the draft in June. But what will start up today will be player testing. So they'll go through the medical testing portion this afternoon, meet with team doctors. Certain players that are here committed to the full combine will do that. And then we'll go right into testing, which is shooting drills, on-court work, drill work, high jump, getting your vertical all squared away, the three-fourth quarter court drill. We'll do that. We'll do a ton of different shooting drill and shooting work this afternoon and this evening. And then tomorrow morning begins the interview process. And I think that's the most challenging part for the player. I mean, the testing part, you're doing, medical testing, you're getting hooked up to different things. Then you're getting on the floor, which is great, but you're doing more cone drills. You're getting your vertical tested. You're getting all these different things tested. You're doing shooting drills, which is just basic shooting drills that these players are used to doing. Now you are getting graded, you're getting tested out in terms of what your shooting percentages are. They do five-star shooting drills, spot shooting drills, shooting off the dribble, any shooting drill, shooting work, and that's the name of the game in the NBA is shooting. You got to have that on the floor. And so everybody goes through that. Guards, centers, forwards, everybody goes through those shooting drills. But the interviews are when it gets sort of like speed dating in a way. Each player gets 30 minutes. Our director of sports psychology runs our interviews. So she is really advanced at asking the right questions, trying to get a little bit of a deeper And again, you only have 30 minutes, so you're not getting a ton of time, but you're trying to get some information out of a player. And some players are open, some players aren't. And that's where all the information you gather as a scout throughout the year, the intel, as we call it, is so important leading into the combine, because it's great for your psychology team, the people behind the scenes that are conducting the interview, and then obviously for our, you know, our executives, David Griffin, Trajan Langdon, Swin Cash, who will be representing us tonight at the lottery, Bryson Graham. They have more of an opportunity to dive into the intel, pick the questions they want to ask, and have a more of a ready question for the player when they have that opportunity. But for players, it's just you're trying to go through all 30 teams here, and you break it down to Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The morning portion will be all player interviews and team interviews. We will be able to see these guys scrimmage Thursday and Friday. So they'll be able to do 5-on-5. There'll be more player testing tomorrow afternoon, but Thursday, Friday, we will be able to see them play 5-on-5. We were able to see the G League guys play Sunday and Monday on the floor in scrimmages. We got to see them test. It was sort of condensing all of it into a quick 2 days. NBA Combine, there's more players that will be attending. And so you break that out into this afternoon and the next 3 days ahead. So it's a long 3 days, especially for the players, because they're getting put through everything. They're getting asked a lot of questions. You're just kind of trying to dive into them as a player and person. You're trying to get it all in. And that's a long, long process for the player.
Man, it's I'm curious if watching this year's playoffs have changed your viewpoint as a scout at all, whether it be about how much you value certain things physically on the court or how much you value certain mental things. Has anything in this year's playoffs maybe reinforced or changed the way that you're looking at some of these guys right now?
Well, it's funny, Nate. It seems like there's always a player that scouts talk about, right? It was Duncan Robinson last year, in terms of finding a specialist, right? Finding a shooter with size that could come in, make spot shots, play off elite talent, you know, be able to defend good enough, maybe not overly athletic, but a player that was overlooked, but a player that was just strictly a shooter. And this draft is a very good draft, I will say that. And anybody that tells you it's top heavy and, oh, it's just, you know, the top 14, not in this draft. It is a very good draft. There's shooting in the second round that teams will identify. I mean, we're, as our group has said multiple times, and just kind of how our team has broken down over the last year, I mean, shooting is a premium in the league. And when you have a player like Zion Williamson, you got to have shooting around him. And we learned that the hard way last year. So shooting is very important. I would say Terrence Mann is a great example of what Terrence Mann has done with the Clippers. That was a player that went through the G League elite tryout. And actually, he got called up to the NBA combine, which we've had four players that have been called up from Sunday and Monday to today, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, that will participate in the combine. So we have four. There's one more player, one more spot that they'll fill this morning. I think that is really interesting because, you know, what Terrence Mann has done, and he went, you know, in the mid-second round, I think he went 49th overall. And, you know, I was a player that was really athletic coming out of Florida State, had really good intel. He was probably raw from a skill set standpoint, but he's very athletic and developed a jump shot, and he was a bulldog. I mean, he had that level of toughness and grit that you want to have and that every team has to have. I think that's why the Milwaukee Bucks have advanced. P.J. Tucker has rubbed off on that team. They needed to be tougher. I thought they were – had some soft qualities in the playoffs. They've always been a talented team. But getting through the challenges, and look, the Brooklyn Nets weren't healthy, but P.J. Tucker rubbed off on that team, and that's why they are where they are. I think that, to me, is what I always keep in the back of my mind. We found that in Najee Marshall last year. You know, we didn't draft Najee Marshall. He was a two-way. He went through the G League Elite Camp and into the Combine. So there's always those things you're looking for. It's not just the guys at the top. We know, and first of all, the guys at the top aren't going to be here probably. Cade Cunningham, those guys, they're not going to be here. It's more of an opportunity for us to look at the rest of the draft. It's looking at the back end of the first round. It's looking at the second round. And we have five picks in this draft, so we can kind of go anywhere. You know, we're not going to probably make all selections because we have four second-round picks and we only have a number of roster spots. But we have a lot of assets that we can use. I think a lot of teams are seeing this draft as a very good draft. I think in terms of guard play, especially at the top, there's some elite scorers in this draft. There's guys that can make shots, and then there's also guys that can fall into that specialist Duncan Robinson conversation, and there's going to be really good two-way candidates. And also the draft and stash word that you'll hear a lot of leading into the draft, the international pool is very good as well. I would say that I think there's probably six or seven names that are in this conversation that teams are really taking a hard look at, which is why it's this process is so exciting. It's such a great time of the year. It's a stressful time because you're trying to get as much done as you, and you're having more of a normal year also because you're having the combine. And right after the combine, we go right into workouts in our own market with six players back to that three-on-three format where you're having that in market, and that we didn't have last year. And we're getting that back, and that's huge. Bringing guys to your own building to work out, to sit down with your staff, to be able to break bread, have a meal with them, and get to know them more instead of having the 30 minutes you're only going to have here at the combine. So that's kind of what's ahead. This is just kind of a big, big step and a big phase, and we're still, I mean, we're getting closer and closer. At the end of July is the draft, so it's coming. And we're, you know, slowly getting there. But the workouts that follow the combine are going to be even bigger to identify some of these things that to your question, that we're looking for. And that's shooting, that's size, you know, that's finding skill, and that's finding guys that can be a rotational player and come off the bench that can help us maybe right away, but also could be back into the second round. That could be, you know, your draft and stash candidates that could be here in 2 to 3 years.
Jared Sutton's our guest. All right, Jared, there's a couple of players I want to ask you about as far as their reputation coming out of the playoffs now that their teams are eliminated. First is Ben Simmons. And this is, I mean, gosh, if you're a Philadelphia fan watching this. And look, this is a guy that's been on three All-Star teams. He made an All-NBA team. He was 2018 Rookie of the Year. He's a 60% foul shooter in the regular season. He shot 34.2% in the postseason. And I'm looking at this stat. So in games 4, 5, 6, and 7, right? And and they lost three of those. He played 34 minutes in the fourth quarters of those games. He didn't take a shot from the floor.
Yeah.
In games 4, 5, 6, and 7 in the fourth quarter, close games, three games they lost, he didn't want nothing to do with it. And Doc Rivers says, well, we got a plan for him, and you know, we want him to be the kind of guy that would get him to the free throw line 10 times a game, and he wants to get there, and he's going to hit 60 or 70%. But man, oh man, he even said, look, offensively, he couldn't figure it out. That was, especially if you're rooting for the 76ers, that was maddening to watch. I mean, what do you do with Ben Simmons if you're the 76ers?
Yeah, it's a tough question for the Sixers to ask, and they got to identify that in terms of Doc Rivers, their head coach, who, you know, they bring over from L.A., a coach that's had a lot of success. You know, I think with him and Embiid, you know, played at an MVP caliber when he was on the floor and healthy, most importantly, right? When Joel's healthy, he is a absolute load, and he's a force, and he's their franchise piece. Ben has good qualities. I want to say that first. He defends. He's a good passer. He's got a high IQ. He's got great size at 6'11". He's athletic. But the free throw shooting, and I mean, it's not even just the lack of three-point shooting and not even looking for a shot. And you just touched on it. I mean, not even looking to score the ball. That is a mental hurdle that Ben Simmons is going through. I just touched on our director of psychology who's running our interviews, right? That, to me, is the biggest piece. Ben Simmons is now, you know, he's not a young player anymore, right? He's an older player. He's an established player in the league. Any skill director or skill mechanic, shot coach, shooting instructor, skill development coordinator, anybody would want to get with Ben Simmons, right? And Ben Simmons' shot, it mechanically needs work. It does. Is it broken? I don't think so. But my question would be, and this gets back to the Terrence Mann answer I had, is how much does a player want to actually work on their areas of deficiency? And this has been something that's really held Ben back, is shooting. So much now that he's lost a lot of confidence just looking to score the ball. And the free throw shooting woes are just as bad as the type of player he is. I mean, you're starting to get into the hack-a-shack conversations with Ben in the playoffs. You're starting to take Ben off the floor in fourth quarters because of offense. When you're putting Seth Curry in the game, who was undrafted, who we had in Santa Cruz, who you have to have on the floor for his shot making, and I go back to shot making, because you got to have guys that make threes. And Seth is an undersized two guard who got torched on the defensive side of the ball. You'd rather have Ben Simmons in a game defensively with his versatility and ability to guard multiple positions. So what you do with Ben Simmons is sit him down and try to identify where you go from here and where you can make improvements. And if he's committed to that, that's the biggest question. I don't know what that is. I don't know what their training program is, their PD staff, what they're working on him with, his commitment level. You know, a lot of these guys, especially the top-tier guys, have their own skill instructor. What is that for Ben Simmons? Because I know that that's got to be frustrating for Joel Embiid, who gets a lot of heat. He's the franchise piece in Philly. He's this trust-the-process guy. But right now, I mean, they have questions to ask. And, look, they tried to deal Ben Simmons at the break, right when we were going into the trade deadline. They were trying to package a deal to go after James Harden, and it fell through. And now, you know, it's tough. Ben Simmons has value in our league. He's a very good player, but there are limitations when you're a max contract guy and you're not looking to shoot the ball in fourth quarters of a playoff game in a game seven. That's where your big pieces have to be max players, and Ben just hasn't been that. And that's a big question Philly's got to ask, because you have to have pillars in this league to compete for a championship. And those pillars have to be up for the challenge in game seven, like Giannis and KD were. Trae Young didn't shoot the ball that well, but Trae Young made some big plays. Trae's their franchise cornerstone piece. He was great. You know, so your star players do have to come up to the challenge in a game seven, and that's what the playoffs is all about, and that's what champions are all about.
Yeah, do you see the look on Embiid's face? Did you remember when Ben Simmons passed up the wide-open layup and just gave the ball up, and Embiid's like, what are you doing? And I was trying to read the lips. He was trying to, I don't know what he said, but he tried to say something, and he's like, okay.
Steven, that's with Trae Young in the help side dunker spot. And I think you know this. Trae Young, I don't know if defense is what I would, you know, identify him as his specialty, right?
Right.
That one was, and look, Ben's comments, I think they're genuine. He was passing up a shot because he thought Trae was going to slide over, and he had a dunk on that. But the answer is no. And, right. That's the disconnect right there. That's the mental hurdle that I'm talking about. And look, some guys, they are labeled as a pillar of a franchise player. But in those moments, are they really that franchise piece? Are they playing to that level? And do they want that role? Do they want that role? Do they want to, you know, commit themselves to that role? Some guys don't. And that's got to be addressed, and that's what you got to look at moving forward.
Yeah, it's kind of like a quarterback that hears footsteps that aren't there. You know, it's feeling a rush that isn't there. I mean, he was thinking I'm gonna get my shot blocked, and he wasn't. It was a layup. And so before he touched on tonight's game, the other guy, Kevin Durant, they lost the series, but I mean, damn, Kevin Durant. And I think we even now. Even in a losing effort, Nate Bucchetti leaves that series with a newfound respect for Kevin Durant. No or yes?
I do.
Absolutely.
I do. But
we talked about this, Nate.
Come on, there's a but.
I do.
On.
But
show us your butt,
man. I feel like if that was LeBron James that put up all those, it'd be talking about how.
Oh, yeah. Why is it about LeBron James?
You can't win.
Didn't bring him up.
Can't win a big one.
Now, see,
KD didn't even get to the conference finals.
LeBron James up and then at home.
KD didn't even get to the conference finals.
We're talking about Durant.
Talk about Durant. Would you, Jarrett? Not
Durant. Kevin Durant.
Jake's entered the chat here.
Hell yeah, I have. This is my guy.
You guys blue sunglasses
Jake,
on. You're not taking any
Jake enters
KD slander right now.
Right.
Man, I'm saying, like KD is, look, he's right now the best player in, I think, in the world in what he was doing tonight. And this is coming back from an Achilles, an injury, coming back with Kyrie out, James Harden.
Put him on hold real quick, because I need Nate to hear all this.
You need Nate to hear all this.
No, you broke up there a little bit. We're trying to get Nate to hear every single good thing that you say about Kevin Durant. You want to make sure.
Go ahead.
Okay, now go ahead. Yep. We got you cleaned up.
So I look. There's things that you know, I understand people might not like about KD. There's things about LeBron people don't like. I understand it. But you've got to respect and appreciate what he did in Game 5 at home and then in Game 7. And he just ran out of steam. I mean, he had no legs. And look, there's something to be said of star player going to Steve Nash and saying, I'm good, keep me in the game. There is a way where you can sub out Kevin Durant for 2 minutes and get him just the minor rest. He didn't want to do that, and Brooklyn rolled the dice. And I respect it. I appreciate it. You know, in playoff games, especially late in the series, you want your best player on the floor, especially the best player that's absolutely unstoppable and I thought unguardable at times for Milwaukee. But he ran out of gas. And Giannis was out of gas, too, but Giannis got spelled a few times for some breaks. And it ended up being somewhat the difference. And I feel for Brooklyn in the sense that this label that, well, if KD had help and if KD had shooting, you know, the Nets have shooting. They do. They ran every single play through Kevin Durant, and that wears guys down. And that also can keep shooters hesitant, like Joe Harris. I talked about Joe Harris last week with you guys. Joe Harris didn't play up to the caliber he's capable of playing at. I think that's a big piece why Brooklyn ends up losing the series. I think Joe's going to kick himself on two wide open threes he missed, particularly the one in overtime with 2 minutes left where he's wide open. You know, KD needs those shots to go down if KD's going to be playing every minute. So I give KD a ton of credit. I have a lot of respect for him playing and the minutes and the workload that he had, the efficiency he had from the field, and the defense too. I mean, Milwaukee was uber physical, and he was great. And that's going to be memorable when we talk about playoff series and game sevens. I mean, KD's going to go down, and KD's had some monumental playoff performances. That one's probably at the top in game seven.
It was a great game and a great series. Okay, let's get your thoughts real quick about tonight. Game two of the Western Conference Finals right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, 8 o'clock tip-off between the Clippers and the Suns. No Kawhi Leonard, no Chris Paul, but they're holding out hope that Chris Paul can return for game three. If you're the Clippers and you want to have a real chance of winning this series, you got to get a game before Chris Paul gets back, right?
I think so, yeah. And right now, you know, Devin Booker is, whoa. I mean, he is, he's playing at an elite level. He's playing at a superstar level, especially with Chris Paul out. He's been ultra-aggressive. They've gotten great play from DeAndre Ayton. Jay Crowder was a great free agent acquisition for them over the summer last summer. He gave them good minutes. And then Cameron Payne has really stepped up, right? I mean, that's the nice thing is Chris Paul is Chris Paul. He is, you know, the point god, if you will. But Cameron Payne, you talk about, I mean, you know, James Jones won Executive of the Year for a reason, getting Cam Payne when he got him, and then the production and the benefit Cam Payne has given this team to just be implemented into the starting lineup as a point guard, to have 9 assists the other day to 1 turnover. I mean, that's big time, especially in a playoff game. He's been ready for the moment. And I think for L.A., yes, they don't have Kawhi, who is an elite defensive player. Paul George, who's been very good playoff P, who, again, has had his struggles in the playoffs in years past, has been really good. And he's been consistent, most importantly, and he shot it really well from three. And Paul's got to be, you know, at this level the entire series. Reggie Jackson has to step up even more. He played well the other night. He's got to play at that level. Pat Beverly has to be a defensive stopper. They need more shooting from Marcus Morris. They need more shooting from Nick Batum. They need a couple of pieces to step up. And I know Terrence Mann, you know, didn't get a lot of looks the other day. Didn't have really a high volume of shot attempts. But, you know, he's got to score the ball for this team to match Phoenix, to match Booker. And, look, the pick-and-roll coverage with Book and playing on the side or playing from behind, drop coverage, I mean, that's all-day mid-range. And I know they're trying to take Book away from threes and getting him towards the rim. But Devin Booker is a very good player. He's a smart player. And, like, I will always tell you guys, and I will tell anybody, the mid-range is not dead. It's a good shot, especially for guys that can shoot the ball like Devin Booker. So you got to be more pressure. I don't think drop coverage is the answer against Devin Booker. You got to switch. You got to get the ball out of his hands, double blitz, do different things with your rotations to get the ball out of Devin Booker's hand for LA to have a chance, especially when you don't have Kawhi, because you don't have an isolation defender on the floor like Kawhi and you got to mix up your coverages now, and you got to get creative with it. And most importantly, you got to get Booker out of his rhythm and off his spots, which is the name of the game with stars. Is get him off spots, get him uncomfortable, and that's what they got to do, because he was just way too comfortable in game one. That's why Phoenix wins game one. Got to be different in game two.
All right, so to kind of tie all this together, honestly, I'm having a little fun with the LeBron KD thing. I think LeBron was unfairly criticized for some of his teams that didn't win, and that's my point, because I think KD deserves all the credit in the world for what he did in this game. And the point that I was trying to make, and I've said this a few times with you, Jarrett, is great players don't win in the postseason. Great teams do. Now, that leads to both Booker and Trae Young. I'm reading a lot of stuff about how up until this point in their respective careers, there's been this kind of knock on both Booker and Trae Young that empty stats. Yeah, they put up a whole lot of stats, but their teams don't win. And now their teams not only win, their teams are in the conference finals. Did Devin Booker and Trae Young change something? Are they better players now? Or are they the same guys that are surrounded by better teammates and better teams? What do you attribute the fact that these guys are actually having success in the postseason all of a sudden?
So I think they're two different situations. I'll start with Devin. And the answer, there is some similarities with both. I would say Monty Williams and Nate McMillan get a ton of credit for both. We've seen what the Hawks have done when they, you know, fired Coach Pierce and they went with Coach McMillan right in the middle of the season, and boom, they went 35-15, right? So coaching was a big part of that. Getting more shooting around Trae was important. But with Monty and Phoenix, and I think James Jones, who I just talked on as the executive of the year, adding pieces around Book, I mean, yes, getting Chris Paul was a huge piece of why the Suns have been able to get to where they are. Because, like, to your point, Nate, it's all about teams. Like, if the casual NBA fan didn't know Devin Booker and they're thinking, wow, you know, this is great. A young player, the star is emerging. Devin Booker's been a star. He just so happens to now be in the Western Conference Finals. And the reality is because they got a veteran piece like Chris Paul, who's a proven winner, who can do so many things and take a lot of pressure off of Book. But remember, the Phoenix Suns in the bubble last year when they didn't have Chris Paul were one of the hottest teams before we got to the playoffs. I think they won like 8 or 9 in a row.
Yep.
And Monty Williams, that was his first year as a head coach. So coaching matters. I mean, we've talked about NBA coaching with Coach Snyder, and we've talked a lot about NBA coach. Monty Williams, to me, he should have been coach of the year. You know, and that's not taking anything away from Thibodeau. He did a great job in New York, but I just think with Monty, I mean, you're taking over a Phoenix team 2 years ago, and you had some success at the end of that year, and they took that success, they builded that around Devin, they added Jay Crowder, who I think was a very, very, he's their toughness. He's that P.J. Tucker, the Terrence Mann that I talked about earlier, when you have to have that tough, gritty dog mentality. Jay Crowder is that. Jay Crowder gets in guys, you know, shorts, he gets physical with guys, he frustrates guys. You got to have that. That's not Devin Booker. So that touches on the team component. Let's switch gears and talk about the Atlanta Hawks, right? So Trae Young, I'm with you. Like, I was not a big Trae Young. I knew he could shoot the ball. I knew he could play make. I knew he was undersized. Defensively, I thought he was going to be a nightmare in the NBA. So you had to do some things creatively around him with his team. I think Clint Capella was a good add for him. And John Collins, the pick and roll game is great for Trae, right? Kevin Huerter, who was great the other night. Having a shooter that can go get his own shot, you know, adding Bogdanović, great addition to that team, right? Size and shooting, having guys, Dario Saric, adding him, Dario Saric giving Trae Young a ton of confidence. You watch them at huddles and timeouts. He's the veteran piece that Trae Young needed to instill in him a different level, right? You can get numbers in regular season games, but then it becomes playoff time. And to see Trae Young's mentality in the Knicks series is when I started to think, wait a second. This Atlanta team could do some things because Trae Young looks different. Late in games, he's got a different mentality. He's talking to fans, but he's not talking to talk. He's talking to build up his own confidence. He's talking because he's got a level of – it's a different mentality he has than when he came into the league. And I think Nate McMillan on the coaching side has done a great job in using Trae properly, using the pick and roll, playing in transition, playing faster, and then playing together. because they were, they were a bad team out of the gate at the beginning of the season. And then fast forward to where they are now with Nate McMillan, man, I mean, it goes to show you that coaching does matter in this league. It does. You've got to be able to connect with players, young stars, most importantly. You've got to build trust. You've got to build rapport. You've got to have a level of toughness about you for the playoffs, and you've got to be able to execute and put your players in the right positions, and you've got to have your right personnel on the floor. You got to draw things at the right times, quick hitters, whatever it is. And Nate McMillan's done a great job with that. So I think both coaches deserve a ton of credit, but I also think the veteran pieces and the executives that added to those teams to make Booker and Trae Young shine more this year, I think that's really the conversation and the answer that I have. Because both those guys are good players, but they're now at the caliber they are in the playoffs because of the pieces that are around them.
All right, before we let you go, who wins in the East, Milwaukee or Atlanta?
I'm going to go with Milwaukee. Last year, even into this year, I had the Nets beating them. I know they weren't healthy, but Milwaukee has proven a lot to me. I'm so happy for Jrue Holiday, most importantly. Jrue struggled in Game 7 shooting the ball and then had some huge shots. I'm happy for Chris Middleton, who I played against when he was at A&M and we were at Mizzou. Second-round pick, you know, here we go again, guys. Like, second-round pick, Chris Middleton, and look where he's at. He was in the freaking D-League, G-League, and now he's got to be on the floor late in games for Giannis for them to have a chance. So same conversation. Giannis is a star. Got to have the right pieces around him. P.J. Tucker, getting him in the trade, right piece. I like Milwaukee, and I think they have a really good chance to win a title, too. I think they have the right pieces. I'm happy for Coach Bud, too. This team, look, down 0-2 to the Nets, got absolutely humiliated in Game 2. Came back, tough, gritty, overtime Game 7. This team's identity is so different to me now after what they showed in that Nets series. And if the Nets were at full strength, who knows how that series would have looked. But the fact that they proved to me something, that to me is why I think Milwaukee's got a really good chance to win it all now. Because I didn't think they could weather the storm when adversity struck in a Game 7 against a guy like KD. I didn't know how they were going to handle that, and they handled it and responded well.
Every time I talk to Jarrett Sutton, I feel like I'm talking to a future GM in the NBA. Just being honest with you. So
let's do it.
I have this dream where I'm going to an NBA game, and I'm gonna have very good seats because the GM of the team is Jarrett Sutton with his VP of Business Operations, Phil St. John. And I'm just putting things out there because I speak things into existence, like LeVar
right.
Ball. Okay.
That's right.
Maybe a WNBA team with a couple of St. John twins
Fine.
Out there, you know, running the press.
Hey, you're onto something there. I'm onto that.
Let's go.
That's an idea. I'm writing these down. I just need Jay courtside for, any LeBron games.
Right.
He's going to have
I won't be there very long.
He's going to have his sunglasses on.
Escorting me off.
Jake's our son's in four guy. He represents us, so we'll have him everywhere. He's a hype guy, It'll be a family business. We'll all take over an NBA franchise, and hopefully Jarrett Sutton will be in Kansas City.
That's right.
Until then,
bring the Kings back.
Thank you so much.
That's right.
And also, Nate wants minute-by-minute updates of Ochai and what he's doing at every second of the workout today.
And Jalen Wilson, please.
He's just,
And Marcus.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get it clear with the league where I can just FaceTime right. Nate and
right.
set Nate up right in front
he just,
of Ochai.
He wants a full scouting report, just the same that you turn into the Pelicans. He wants that in by noon tomorrow, so hopefully you
have
can
have it on my desk.
Thank you, Jarrett.
Yeah, it's on the calendar. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
This is Jarrett Sutton.
He's the man.
Dude, when KD was having that game in Game 5, he just texted me, KD, period.
What else
right.
does he
well,
need?
You know.
I was like, yep. Yeah, man.
And then you tell him, but LeBron would have done.
I said,
LBJ.
LeBron would have hit a four-point shot in that.
That's right, he would have. Damn right.
His foot would not have been out. On the line.
What was the MTV, the Rockin' Jock?
Yeah, or remember 25-pointer
yeah.
or whatever it was?
Yeah, Michael Rappaport.
Big time. Well, I don't necessarily
Let's not bring up Rappaport and KD right. in the same conversation.
Right. But I remember he hit a big shot
time.
There.
Hit a 25-pointer one time.
We're going to take a break now. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.